Good morning. Hi, I'm Karen Kinnear, and I serve as facilitator for the Small Group Ministry Program, and I want to give you the announcements today. Everyone is invited to coffee hour in Fellowship Hall after the service. To get there, you go through this door. So everyone's invited to coffee hour after the service. To get there, you go through the door here, down the hallway, and then either down the stairs or take the elevator. Child care is also available. If the need arises any time during the service, please feel free to go down to childcare, which is down there and a level below the fellowship hall. If it's your first time with us, we're very happy to have you here. And I have to add, if you've been here before, we're also delighted to have you here. If you're new here, please sign the guest book. There is a guest book in the vestibule, which is the fancy name for the little room out here. Or we'll also have, there's a visitor's table at coffee hour. And the reason we ask you to sign that is if you're interested in getting our newsletter or getting our announcements. So that's just if you want more information.
Our opening words are by the Reverend Linda Susan Ulrich, who's the Associate Minister at the UU Church in Ann Arbor, Michigan. Open up the doors. Push on looming wooden arches embroidered with ironwork. Brace shoulders against the weight of history unmoved. Dust off the musty smell of unused joy and stored up sorrow. Knock rust off the hinges if you have to, and let your breath precede you inside. Open the doors more. Make room for a shaft of sunlight to cross the threshold. Give the dust motes something to dance about. Peek through a single slice of possibility and name even the hidden half-truths you see. Open the doors wider still. Pour yourself through the gap. Strut or sneak or sidle as suits you best. Cleanse whatever scrapes catch your skin and bind up the wounds that keep you from entering whole. Open the doors as far as they will go. Draw on the strength of the stones beneath you. Ground yourself in a firm sense of who you are. Stand as a beacon welcoming the next seeker and shine far beyond the lintel and sill. Open all that you are. Heighten and deepen your connections to the world around you. Broaden your definition of neighbor. Grow into the largest target for grace that you can muster. And pray to become a gateway for even greater love and compassion. Open up the doors, my friends, lest we keep the stranger out and condemn ourselves to prisons of our own making. And now Nancy from our choir is going to light the chalice as I share these words from Paul Sprecher. We light this chalice to kindle the fire of commitment to spreading our beloved faith, proclaiming the good news that all are worthy and all are welcome, that God is love and none shall be left behind. May we carry this flame to all we encounter, letting our lives shine with its glow. Please rise in body or in spirit and join in hymn number 361, Enter, Rejoice, and Come In. Please join in our covenant and affirmation. Love is the spirit of this church, and service its law. This is our great covenant, to dwell together in peace, to seek the truth in love, and to help one another. Seated. Now Michelle and I have a story for you. This is a story by Melanie Watt titled Scaredy Squirrel, and I spent way too much time on this PowerPoint we're sharing with you.
And if the choir wants to move so they could see. Oh, never mind. You thought about it already.
That's right, because I sent it to Mike earlier, so he actually has the
all
pictures.
Right.
You won't see all the animation over here, but you'll get to see the pictures at least.
And the song that we just said sang referenced Don't Be Afraid of Some Change, and Scaredy Squirrel is just a bit afraid of change. And if you were to read the actual physical book, there is a warning that comes with it. It says, Scaredy Squirrel insists that everyone wash their hands with antibacterial soap before reading this book. Scaredy Squirrel never leaves his nut tree. He'd rather stay... He'd rather stay in his safe and familiar tree than risk venturing out into the unknown. The unknown can be a scary place for a squirrel. A few things that Scaredy Squirrel is afraid of.
Green Martians, killer bees, tarantulas, poison ivy, germs, sharks.
So Scaredy Squirrel's perfectly happy to stay right where he is. These are his advantages of never leaving the nut tree.
Great view, plenty of nuts, safe place, no tarantulas, poison ivy, green Martians, killer bees, germs, or sharks.
The disadvantages of never leaving his nut tree.
Same old view, same old nuts, same old place.
In Scaredy Squirrel's nut tree, every day is the same. Everything is predictable. All is under control.
Monday through Sunday.
Scaredy Squirrel's daily routine.
6:45 a.m., wake up. 7 o'clock a.m., eat a nut. 7:05 a.m., 7:15 a.m., look at the view. 12 noon, eat a nut. 12:30 p.m., look at the view. 5 o'clock p.m., eat a nut. 5:31 p.m., look at the view. 8 o'clock p.m., go to sleep.
But let's say, just for example, that something unexpected did happen, you can rest assured that this squirrel is prepared. A few items in Scaredy Squirrel's emergency kit are...
hard hat, antibacterial soap, calamine lotion, parachute, bug spray, mask and rubber gloves, net, Band-Aid, sardines.
What to do in case of an emergency, according to Scaredy Squirrel.
Step one, panic! Step two, run! Step three, get kit. Step four, put on kit. Step five, consult exit plan. And step six, exit tree, if there is absolutely, definitely, truly no other option.
The exit plan.
Top secret. Exit one. Note to self, watch out for green Martians and killer bees in the sky. Exit 2, note to self, do not land in river if unavoidable.
use sardines to distract the sharks. Exit 3, note to self, look out for poison ivy and for tarantulas roaming the ground. And exit 4, note to self, keep in mind that germs are everywhere.
With his emergency kit in hand, Scaredy Squirrel watches. Day after day, he watches until one day, a Thursday, at 9:37 a.m., a killer bee appears. Scaredy Squirrel jumps in panic, knocking his emergency kit out of the tree. That was not part of the plan. Scaredy Squirrel jumps to catch his kit. He quickly regrets this idea. The parachute is in the kit. But something incredible happens. He starts to glide. Scaredy Squirrel is no ordinary squirrel. He's a flying squirrel. Scaredy Squirrel forgets all about the killer bee, not to mention the tarantulas, poison ivy, green martians, germs, and sharks, because he feels overjoyed, adventurous, carefree, alive, until he lands in a bush.
Score, 5.7.
And plays dead. 30 minutes later, 1 hour later, 2 hours later, finally, Scaredy Squirrel realizes that nothing horrible is happening in the universe today, in the unknown today. So he returns to his nut tree. All the excitement has inspired Scaredy Squirrel to make a dramatic change in his life. Scaredy Squirrel's new and improved daily routine.
6:45 a.m., wake up. 7 o'clock a.m., eat a nut. 7:15 a.m., look at the view. 8:37 a.m., jump into the unknown. 9:45 a.m., play dead. 11:45 a.m., return home. 12 o'clock noon, eat a nut. 12:30 p.m., look at the view. 5 o'clock p.m., eat a nut. 5:31 p.m., look at the view. 8 o'clock p.m., go to sleep.
P.S. For the emergency kit, Scaredy Squirrel is no... Scaredy Squirrel is in no hurry to pick it up just yet, as it landed in a bush of poison ivy.
The end.
And that's just something we all face, things that we're afraid of, or that we're nervous to try and start doing. And sometimes being forced to try something new ends up being a really wonderful thing.
Indeed. I'm going to be talking more about trying new things later on in the sermon. But for today, we also want to install or commission our teachers for this trimester. The trimester has actually been underway since early December, but the holiday season was so busy we didn't do this teacher commissioning, and so we want to do that now. We did one for the fall teachers back in the beginning of the year, and then when the next trimester comes, we'll do one for those teachers. But could I have this trimester's teachers come forward?
Teachers, OWL facilitators, youth group leaders, anyone who's working with youth or kids, please come on up. Bring your order of service with you, please.
Right, because we have both OWL classes starting today and also our first Chalice program starting today. So it's a big day in our religious education program.
And we have two new people that are leading our youth groups as well. So please come stand here.
When you're at the 9 a.m. service, you can see that half of the congregation gets up and leaves every Sunday after this point in the service, and half of the adults with them, because it takes a veritable army of volunteers to run our religious education programs here, and we are so grateful to them. I'm particularly grateful as a parent. It means so much to me that you are taking the time to dedicate yourselves to the growth and learning and spiritual development of our children and youth. And so I want to extend a personal thank you for the work that you do. But we all come here together today to install our teachers for this trimester and celebrate the beginning of another year of learning together in our living tradition. And if you could, parents and children and youth, join with me in reading the words that are in your order of service. We come today with trust and joy as our children and youth take their next steps on their religious education roadmap with you. Here, our children and youth will learn about our liberal religious heritage and about the ways we interact with the world with love and justice and compassion. We pledge to respect you, learn from you, have fun with you. We know that we are also a part of the teaching and learning community.
And religious education teachers and facilitators, if you can join together. We are grateful. And together, the congregation,
we value that we are a learning community together. We pledge to be teachers and learners along with you as we create this beloved community. In gratitude, trust, respect, and support, we, the members and friends of the First Parish Church of Stowe and Acton, install you as our religious education teachers for this trimester. With great rejoicing!
Thank you very much for giving of your time. And at this time, we are going to take the light of our chalice to our religious education program, and Elle is going to carry the lantern for us. She was supposed to do it on her birthday last month, and there was a snafu, so she gets to do it today.
For our time of prayer or meditation this morning, I share these words by the Reverend Jay Abernathy. Let us join in a moment dedicated to that quiet power within us. It is within that we find the will to face the world. It is within that we find the love to embrace the world. It is within that we find our personal identity and know the world. Yet within us is also a great void. We feel this void at times of loneliness, frustration, and despair. Sorrow, hatred, and greed, too, are within us. Just as we need to be alone at times to put things right, so do we need to be with others to love and be loved. This great social urge also is within us as powerfully as that separateness, that uniqueness that gives us identity. Let us look within ourselves with honesty and trust. We shall find there a personal center important to who we are. We shall find there something held in common with those about us, family, friends, and neighbors, and in ever-widening circles until we find that which we have in common with all people, something irreducibly human, something completely natural. This is the center of all religion, all love, all concern for others, and it is the center of all personal growth. May these few moments be a personal time for you, a time for that person within you who feels at one with humanity, with nature, and with all the universe that was, is, and shall be. Blessed be, and amen. Our next hymn is number 1012 in your teal hymnals, When I Am Frightened. I always feel like at this point in the service, some of us need to stand and some of us need to sit in a small, still space. And so whichever it calls to you, feel free to do that.
You
Our reading today is titled 11 Traits of Churches That Will Impact the Future by Kerry Newhoff. He's a Christian minister who writes a blog that's well known for talking about the changing and evolving church. He writes, "Here's what I see as hallmarks of the churches that will make an impact in the next decade. One, the ability to say no. One of the reasons churches don't change is because leaders are unwilling to say no to current members who prefer things the way things were. When you learn to say no to the preference of some current members, you learn to say yes to a community that is ready to be reached. Two, outsider focus. Churches that become passionate about people outside their walls will be far more effective than churches that are passionate about keeping the few people that they have inside their walls. Better still, you will have a healthier church. Three, quick decision making. If you have a decision making process that's slow and complicated, you will not be able to keep up with the pace of change needed. Having multi-level approval processes and having to get congregational approval on matters will block innovation. I agree with Jeff Brody, if you can't make a decision within 24 hours, your process is too slow. Four, flexibility. You don't need to change your mission for the most part, but you do need to change your method. Flexible and adaptive churches that can innovate around strategy and different initiatives will have the freedom to make the changes they need to make an impact moving forward. Five, a willingness to embrace smaller to become bigger. Mega churches will continue to grow, but most of us won't lead mega churches. When small churches stop trying to be mega churches, good things can happen. In fact, more and more larger churches will start embracing smaller venues, locations, and partnerships to keep growing. Six, a quicker, lighter footprint. Churches need a quicker, lighter footprint to grow. If you're waiting for millions to build your building, you might wait forever. Get innovative and start looking at portable and non-traditional ways of growing your ministry. Seven, valuing online relationships as real relationships. Churches that aren't online beyond a website are going to miss the boat. Real interaction with real people online is, well, real. Sure, face-to-face is deeper, but people will tell you things online that they can't muster the courage to tell you face-to-face. Whether you get them to a real church is increasingly debatable. I would love that, but we'll have to see. As much as you might hate it, virtual relationships are becoming real relationships. Eight, an openness to questions. Most unchurched people today come in with questions that seem weird to those of us who spent a lifetime in church. Don't try to answer them right away. Churches that understand that embracing questions is as important as providing immediate answers will make an impact in the future. Nine, a high value on experimentation. The more traditional you are, the less you will value experimentation. The more successful you are, the less you will value experimentation. If you start to raise the value of experimentation, you accelerate change and flexibility. 10, prioritizing a for you, not from you culture. Churches in decline often think in terms of what they can get from people, money, time, growth, etc. Churches that will make an impact on the future will be passionate about what they want for people, financial balance, generosity, the joy of serving, better families, and of course, he says, Christ at the center of everyone's life. 11, a tailored experience, not a tailored message. You don't have to tailor the message to unchurched people, but churches that have an impact will tailor the experience. There were presents under my Christmas tree last Christmas, but I'm not a shopping mall fan. 90% of my gift buying happened online. The content was the same. The experience changed. Churches that decide that they will hold the message sacred but tailor the experience to an ever-shifting culture will be more effective. That's what I say. What I see, he concludes. What else do you see? One of the ways we increase our mission and our connection to the ministry that we have beyond the wider, beyond these four walls and in the wider world is through the plate sharing that we do each month with different agencies that we've chosen to support. And to tell you about this month's agency, I invite forward Diane Miller.
Good morning. My name is Diane Miller, and guess what? I've been a member of this church for over 40 years. And I've been a founding member and a board member of Rhea House. And what Rhea House has done for 6 years is they've supported women going that have been in the sex trade market. I'd like to thank First Parish Church and you, our members and friends, for supporting us each year for the Plate Sharing Initiative. Rhea House is a 501(c) organization that stands beside and supports women who have been trafficked and sexually exploited. What does that mean? Why should I care? It means that young girls, some as young as 13, and women have been promised a different life, sometimes involving receiving beautiful clothes, maybe a car, and availability of drugs in exchange for being sold. How bad can that be? Well, I'll tell you. It could be having sex with someone 6 times a night, 6 different men. These girls and women are not just trying to make a fast buck. These are women that are caught up in the web of unkept promises and not knowing how to escape. Frequently, they're beaten. And if that doesn't work, they claim to threaten their family members. This is who Rhea House is standing beside and offering them a chance for a new and a better life. I'm proud to tell you that this past year, Rhea House has supported over 200 women through grants and generous donations from people here at First Parish Church. After the service, I'll be downstairs at the social justice table and be willing to share any more information that you'd like. Thank you.
Morning. So for those of you who are on the search committee and those of you who read some of the website that I put out to this congregation when you were in the process of calling me, there was a sermon on there about, it was called something about like grow like a squash plant. And that is something of the part one to this sermon that's part two of. But for those of you who didn't read that sermon, that's not a problem. This is not dependent upon it, but I just wanted to say that for those who did. And in the spirit of talking about things that make us a little scared and frightened and trying change and different things, I'm doing two things differently today. One is I'm standing down here without my notes. I have the full sermon written up there, and if I go up there, I'll read it. So I'm down here, because that's my scaredy squirrel safety kit, right? The second thing I'm doing differently today is I'm wearing blue. Every single Sunday since I've gotten here, I have worn a black blazer jacket because your previous minister always wore a black robe. And I didn't want to wear a robe, but I didn't want to deviate too much from that aesthetic. So I wore black every single Sunday until today. It's a big risk to put on some color. Yeah, so I hope you'll support me in that. Because it's a little scary wearing blue. Change can be scary. But for those of us who are watching church trends, the trends we're watching are scary. In 1986, when I was still in high school, and young adults were the earliest Gen Xers and the last of the boomers in that year, young adults attended church 90%. Only 10% of young adults in 1986 did not attend church, at least somewhat, some of the time. Now, anyone want to guess what that was 30 years later in 2016? Flipped? Not quite that bad. Not quite that bad yet. 30% is a very close guess. It's actually close to 40. It's like 38, 39. I forget the exact number. It's up there. But it's almost 40%. So over a third, nearing that halfway mark of young adults today don't come to church ever. And that's partly in response to what we call the nuns, that there are more and more people who don't consider themselves religious. And so check none. That's where we get the term nuns. When you get a list of, are you any of these religions, they check none. So although NUNs are also on the decline, well, that's another story for the Catholics to solve. So the nuns are on the rise, and that's one reason that we have lower church attendance among millennial young adults. But one of the other factors is even for those who consider themselves religious or those who say spiritual but not religious, they say the number one reason, and this actually goes across generations, the number one reason that people don't come to church who are considering themselves religious or spiritual is because they feel that they are getting their spiritual needs met elsewhere. They don't need church. They don't see what it has for them. And if you think about it, there's a lot of reasons why this is true and good reasons why this is true. For one, one of the ways we build community now is electronic. For better or for worse, we can build connections online. So if you were like a Doctor Who fan 30 years ago, it was hard to find other Doctor Who fans. You had to, I don't know, go to science fiction conventions to meet other people. You would go and hang out in your local bookstore in the sci-fi section, desperately hoping to meet other science fiction fans. The way I met like my husband, who's a sci-fi fan, is I went to church and met him there. And UU churches were a good place for people who were members of various countercultural groups to meet up. If you were a theological minority, this was a good place for you to meet other people who are of like minds. And a good place for liberals to meet other liberals. Good place for LGBT people to find community and be welcomed as well. And all those groups and more can find online communities that aren't just accessible to them when the bookstore is open or when the convention is in town, but are accessible 24 hours a day. So how many of you have an online friend who you've never met in person, who you would call a friend? A substantial percentage, and particularly among some of our younger members. Now, how many of you have an online friend who has helped you through a hard time or who you have helped through a hard time? Right. So we are building community in electronic ways that are meaningful and real. And we don't just call this like in real life. Sometimes we say IRL, in real life, on the computer to mean people you know, not virtually. But virtual life is real life, too. Virtual friends are real friends, too. And that's an important part of community. And so that's why our reading said, if you're not doing church online, other than just having a website, you're missing out. I can say that I have provided pastoral care online. I know that this church has a thriving forum discussion group, and you have various Facebook groups and Facebook pages where conversation is happening around important issues as well. And if you would like more information on how to connect to some of those groups, I'm sure that you can be helped by Jolene at our membership table, and also the social justice folks can tell you about some of the social justice groups online that we have. So that's just one example of how church has to change to meet this demographic. And I want to say about this next way that I'm going to talk about, which is worship, that this doesn't mean that we're giving up on this kind of worship. When we talk about how we need to change worship, it doesn't mean that we get rid of this. It means we supplement this. Because this kind of worship, where we are in a sanctuary on a Sunday morning with hymns in a hymnal that was put together in 1993, the year after I got out of college, this kind of worship is still working for a lot of people. And that's why we have so many people here. And it's valuable and important. And there are things that we can do through this kind of worship that we can't do in other ways. But I think that the sermon form is decreasing in its importance. And that's a hard thing for me to say as a sermonizer, as one who gets up here and gives the sermon, that I think that it is less important than it has ever been before. And that's, you know, value-free judgment to say that. But what we have now at our fingertips is the ability to go on YouTube and listen to a TED Talk on any subject that you want by an expert in the field who's a great public speaker and who will probably tell you everything I just told you more eloquently. But what we don't have on YouTube is the ability to touch the shoulder of the person next to us, is the ability to greet our neighbor and connect about things that have happened with them, is the ability to share our joys and sorrows and feel the loving support of community like a net under us in our times of sorrow and as a buoyant balloon under us in our times of joy. We don't have the opportunity on YouTube to have our children taught our religious values along with their peers in age-appropriate settings in ways that are connected and integrated with this faith. We don't have on YouTube the ability to, as we're watching the video, connect to social justice topics in the world in the same way that we can here, where we are not just learning, but we are actively organizing around our issues. If just in a small way with our plate sharing, but in many other ways that we do throughout this church, like the friendship packets that we have going, and to hear the direct impact that our dollars and our time and our gifts are making in a different way here in worship. So I think that while worship has to grow and change, that there are many things that are valuable about having this time together once a week in community in four square walls, also in circular sanctuaries if you happen to have one. So, but at the same time, I have a millennial friend about a decade younger than I am who was complaining on Facebook recently about how she grew up in Unitarian Universalism and went to our conferences as a youth and experienced there the most dynamic, powerful, heartfelt, participatory spiritual experiences that she's ever had in her life. And she said, you know, I've tried, but I just can't get that same experience in our church pews as an adult. And while there are reasons for that that go partly to the nature of a conference where there's intimate bonding that goes on over a whole weekend that we can't replicate in a church experience, in a worship experience in a church, there are things we can learn from that about how we can move out of our heads and into our hearts more. And that's the trend that I think sermonizing is going for the future, is to move out of the head into the heart. to move a little bit more away from the script and into direct connection. So that's why I'm doing a little bit of that today, even though it's scary for me as an old school writer. The other thing I wanted to lift up about the way churches need to change is something from that article. And I think it was number 3 or number 4, where it talked about if you can't make a decision in 24 hours, your process is too slow. Now, back in the fall, we had a good example of our church wanting to take a stand. We really wanted to take the stand. We voted unanimously, ultimately, to make the social action of putting transgender flags in our lawn to show our support for the transgender community. But the process by which we got there was a little slow, it was a little cumbersome, and it was a little bit painful. There were feelings that were hurt, there were people who were frustrated about the process. We heard from some people that we had people who were visiting that day who said, "This process is ridiculous, I'm not coming back." Those are the people we lost because our process was too cumbersome and too slow. Now, this is not to say that we throw out congregational polity with the bathwater and that we just go whole hog to saying we can just take a stand however without a process, but it means that our process needs revising. There was another vote that came up as a motion that day to say, can we take a stand directly on the ballot initiative and say that we as a church support a yes vote on this ballot issue? And the answer was no. No, we can't, because our process requires that we announce everything that's going to be voted on a month in advance, and that goes out to the community, and that for a duly called meeting, and only those things can be on our ballot. And so we were not able to do that. And it was frustrating for people. There were people in our congregation, especially some of our younger adults, our millennials, who felt like, why can't we all know we stand for this. The UUA stands for this. It's in keeping with our stance as a welcoming congregation, etc. But we were unable to act because our system kept us from acting quickly. Now, I don't know that we'll ever get to a point where 24 hours later we can have a vote of this congregation on a social justice issue. I personally would slow that down a bit. But there are ways we can move from a month notice in this internet age to something faster. Because a month notice was really necessary when, you know, back in the days of carts and horses, and, you know, or even just like the telephone and the mail were the only way to get words around. We get word out to most of our members electronically, instantly. And so our systems, our processes can be updated to reflect that technology. And what the result can be is that millennials, younger adults, will see that we are able to act quickly on the issues that we do care vitally about in this world. So I think we have the process there to make change. I think there are changes that we can make as a congregation. I think the good news is that one of the things that keeps people away from church is that they think church is hypocritical, that there are too many churches out there that are preaching a message of love or have a theology that says that they love, and then their actions and even their preaching belie that message of love. That they believe that, you know, the gospel is love, and yet they preach hate, and they share hate, and they bar their doors from admittance. Here in Unitarian Universalism, we're doing a really good job of living out our values and our principles of love and openness in a real way in this world, in a way that is different and accepting and honest and true and is open and welcoming at the same time. So that's the good news, that I think we are well poised as we go into the future, that a lot of the reasons that are out there of why churches aren't growing simply don't apply to us, because we are something different here. We are building a new way together. And on that note, I invite you to rise in body or in spirit and join in hymn number 1017, Building a New Way.
Let us go in peace and in love and in courage as we face the unknown future together with love, acceptance, and with the spirit of community around us. Amen.